T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Yeah, not much has changed. I'm still all by myself.
No, but I'm back.
I'm getting along okay by myself, and I'm glad you're back, because yesterday it felt like I was talking to myself. Jordan, do you have a good Passover? I know it's ongoing.
Passover is still happening. We are having another Seder tonight after the show. But yes, I needed yesterday off because it is a holy day, and I had to do quite a bit of cooking. So it was a lovely, lovely Passover. We streamed it on Facebook, my personal Facebook, and my Instagram, if anybody wants to take a look at that, at Jordana Verde. And we Zoomed our family. And, my parents were in Florida, and my aunts and uncles were in Connecticut, my sister in New York, and my brother in New Jersey. It was amazing. It was really a cool thing to be able to be all together. And we shared materials, and we went through the story of Passover, and it was Passover in the age of technology and pandemic.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I have a Zoom Seder scheduled for this evening.
Great.
Yeah, my daughter-in-law and their family invited us to participate via Zoom. So we're looking forward to that. We got the wine ready to go. We don't have to do anything, do we?
No, you don't have to do anything. You might be asked to read something if they sent you a Haggadah, which is the book that we read. But no, you just have to drink 4 glasses of wine.
Okay, I can do that. I can do that. All right, good to have you back, Jor. In the meantime, just enough time for a few head-turning headlines and developments. As Laura told you, 1,242 people have tested positive for COVID-19 in Minnesota. By the way, out of those cases, 675, just over half, are no longer in isolation. But 11 more deaths in Minnesota yesterday, bringing the total up to 50. And yesterday was the deadliest day so far for the United States. Almost 2,000 coronavirus deaths in one day. Yesterday, Governor Walz said Minnesotans have flattened the curve more than any other state, but warned that these gains could be lost overnight. You know, the experts, with their assumptions, they were assuming a doubling of COVID-19 cases every 2 days, but it's happening every 8 days, according to Commissioner Jan Malcolm. So that is good news. And more good news, Jor, people apparently are not being hospitalized for as long as predicted. Shorter stays mean more beds available for new patients. On the other hand, it does appear like infected people, on average, spread the coronavirus to 4 other people, making it nearly twice as infectious as forecast. So a little bit of good news and bad news. And again, 1 in 5 infected people have no symptoms, according to Chris Ayersman, state infectious disease director. Couple of other things that caught my eye. Earlier this week, Jor, Korea's version of the CDC announced that 51 people who recovered from COVID-19 have tested positive again. They now believe the virus can reactivate in people who have been cured. So there's still so much.
Did they say how soon after?
No. No other details. And we heard this happened in Japan as well. So, again, we just don't know enough about this virus yet. It was interesting to me, in the UK, researchers are saying, in an attempt to get the economy rolling again down the road, that young people who don't live with their parents should be allowed to return to work first. And that's in order to ease the severe damage being done to the economy. So again, younger people at less risk, but as we're about to find out this hour, being young does not make you invincible with COVID-19. But these researchers are saying unless a vaccine is discovered quickly, it's unlikely there will be any riskless or painless course of action. The other thing that's being floated, you know, if you have the antibodies, if you've had COVID-19, maybe then you can go back to work. But otherwise, it's going to be dicey until we have a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. We are going to speak with a friend of mine whose son is suffering with COVID-19. He's 19 years old, and she has been taking care of him for at least the last 3 weeks. He has two younger brothers that are living with him, and of course, her husband and two dogs. So Ellie Zweigbaum is going to be joining us in just a few minutes to talk about the experience. And Jacob, who is currently suffering from COVID-19, was scheduled to join us, and he was excited to do so this morning when he was feeling a little bit better, but a very bad headache has taken over him once again, and he needed to lie down. That's one of his symptoms. But his mom, Ellie, is going to join us and walk us through how he contracted it, you know, 19 years old, and how it has just ravaged him. So we are going to hear her story, currently living through treating or taking care of somebody with COVID-19. But before we go to break, Paul, I just wanted to say congratulations to Mike Lynch. You know, we heard today on the morning show the big announcement, and you heard in Laura's news that after 40 years at WCCO Radio, he is retiring. And what an extraordinary achievement for Mike Lynch, for, I mean, really, to have him around for that long. And she said he started in the afternoon on the Steve Cannon show. I mean, he's just such a part of CCO history. And I just want, we're going to have huge celebrations, of course, for Mike when we can all go back into the studio and hopefully at the fair. But I just wanted to wish him well. And I mean, you're really going to have to carry the load here, buddy, now. Okay, so you better get it together because this weather today, that was a nightmare.
You know, with all deference to Sid, I hope not to be working when I'm in my 90s. as tempting as that is, I may have to, depending on how business goes. But hey, look, tip of the hat to Mike Lynch. I spent much of my career listening to Mike. He really set a very high bar for every single meteorologist in this state. I'm among millions of Minnesotans who came to trust him and really appreciate his sense of humor and also his sense of science. I mean, he's always been true to the science, so I have a lot of respect. There's always another chapter, and Mikey, we wish you the very best. You've earned it.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned. Ellie Zweigbaum will join us, and she will share the story of her son currently suffering with COVID-19. So what is it like to live with COVID-19 as a patient and as a caretaker? Jordana and Paul here, thank you for joining us. We appreciate the time today. And the story you are about to hear, we haven't heard on the air yet before, and it's scary, my friends. My friend, Ellie Zweigbaum, is currently caring for her son, Jacob, and the rest of her family. She has two other sons and a husband and two dogs. And her son, Jacob, is suffering with COVID-19. He's 19 years old. He was going to join us on the air, felt a little bit better this morning, but she just texted me before the show and said his headache was so bad that he had to go and lay down. Ellie is going to take us through the saga that has been their life for about the last 3 weeks. Ellie, welcome to the program.
Hey, hi, Jordana. How are you?
And by the way, thank you for coming on. I know how hard this is. I've been following your updates, and you and I had a long talk about this. So I understand that this is really hard, and if you need to stop at any point, you just tell us, okay?
Okay, thank you. So what would you like to know?
So take us back to the beginning. Yeah, take us back to the beginning. When and where did Jacob come down with COVID-19?
So Jacob goes to the Berklee College of Music in Boston, and they were one of the first universities, along with like Harvard and MIT, to say that they were closing, and that was the second week in March. And actually, it was the first week in March. And he happened to have a flight home on March 13th because that was going to be their spring break. And the university informed the kids literally like 2 days before their midterms were done, that they had 3 days to get all their stuff out of their dorms, if they lived in dorms, and that they would not be coming back to school. And Jake, fortunately, had an apartment, so he just figured he's just going to come home, and we'd figure this all out in a few weeks when this virus was gone. But obviously, it's not gone. We're pretty sure that he either contracted it at school, there was a girl in his class who was confirmed with it, or he contracted it at the Logan Airport. When he arrived and I picked him up on the 13th, he was breathing really weird when I picked him up, but I just didn't really think anything about it. I just thought maybe he was just, like, tired. It was, like, a long day, and he had to sit in a bad seat on the plane. And then later that day, he didn't want to, like, play basketball with his brothers. The next day, he didn't want to go for a walk with us. He was saying he was getting winded when he went up the stairs, and we just sort of were like, he's just being Jake. I don't know what's going on. He's just annoyed that he has to be home for spring break, and then we're stuck in the house. And then on Monday, March 23rd, which was 10 days after he came home, and he basically had been in his room the whole time we had come home, and I think that's probably why none of us have gotten sick. And I'll explain some of the stuff I did later to prevent that. But when he, on March 23rd, he started getting this horrible headache, just, and it came on really quick. His chest, he said, was feeling like somebody was, like, pushing it in, and he was having horrible stomach cramps. And I just checked it up to, he just ate a bunch of pizza, he has horrible heartburn, and that's what's going on. But then in the middle of the night, this gets a little gross, he just had severe diarrhea for a couple hours. He started getting this tight, dry cough. No fever, no, like, nasal congestion, no sneezing, none of that. And then the following day, he had a migraine all day, the diarrhea again, this dry cough, and that kind of lasted until, that's been going on every single day. By the second day of this, we had already talked to his doctor, and he had prescribed some Zofran for the nausea. He had, just told us to just keep giving him Gatorade, and just, he said, it seemed like more of a risk to bring him into the hospital than to, and expose him to another strain than to, like, have him stay at home. So we kept him in his room. He has a bathroom in his room, so he's able to just stay there. And then about a week later, it was getting really bad again. And so this is now March 28th, and they put him on prednisone. And for about 2 days, he felt a little bit better when he was on that because it gave him some energy. But the diarrhea never stopped. He just, his breathing was bad. He was taking his inhaler throughout the day. And nothing that he ate would stay in him. So then we were lucky and we were able to get connected with a doctor at the University of Minnesota, who happens to be, I don't know that I want to say his name over there, but he happens to be working with a lot of these cases there and the planning of the new hospital that they have there. And so he kind of took him on and has been having us send him his vitals twice a day, looks at them, and then something helpful that people should know is we were able to order online a pulse oximeter. And that is reassuring because then we know that his oxygen levels are okay, that we don't have to bring him in. We also were told to pick up a blood pressure monitor at Walgreens, and I take his blood pressure and his temperature and his pulse every day. He never has had a fever throughout this entire thing, and that was one of the reasons that the doctors were really not thinking that this is some other kind of a virus, because if you had, like, a bacterial infection, you probably would have a fever. But I'm not a doctor, so I'm just saying that. another thing is it's like he'll like have about an hour or two a day where he thinks he starts feeling better, and then we get really excited, and then the headache just boom comes back on and he feels sick again. What else would you like to know?
Ellie, this is Paul, and on behalf of all our listeners, really sorry for what Jacob is going through and what your family is going through, and we hope for obviously a speedy recovery. My question to you is, did any of the doctors ever say, hey, we need to test him, or so we have the test?
That's a great question, and I literally get that question like 10, 15 times a day in texts, emails, messages. And what every single doctor has said is that we have a shortage of tests in Minnesota, which is very frustrating to them. It's frustrating to me, but I totally understand. And that the only way he will get tested is if he were to be admitted to a hospital here. At first, some people were able to get tests a few weeks ago, but now they're only giving tests to people that are admitted and have like critical, like they come in there or they're having respiratory issues and they need to test it. But they're not giving it to people who have what Jake has, is this GI strain of the virus. We even like tried to do the trial at the U of M. We've done all the like app tests, and most of them, like when we go on to those COVID-19 application tests, they'll say go right to the hospital, and every one of the doctors we've talked to has said the risk of him getting exposed to another strain or me or the rest of our family by taking him in is greater than admitting him. A lot of people,
Ellie,
have been asking about, oh, what else were you gonna ask me?
Well, you mentioned you're at risk, and I know you have two sons at home and your husband. How are you keeping yourself, because you're his nurse, how are you keeping yourself and your family safe?
So I happen to be a total news junkie, and I've been following this since December. And while, no, I have not been hoarding toilet paper or anything like that, I definitely had been following this and making sure that, like, in my house over starting in, like, January, February, I was making sure that we had Clorox wipes, that we had bleach, that we had, I had at least, like, 4 or 5 cans of Lysol. And then in March when I started, like, when this lockdown kind of thing happened, I just started thinking, what would I need? Like, I'm not going to, like, get the masks, so, like, what can we do? So one thing was, my sister's mother-in-law, for some reason, had 2 masks of the N95 masks that she dropped off at my house. So Jake has one, and I have one. When I go to his room, this is kind of like what I've set up. I have, like, a table that's 6 feet from his room, and on that table I have all the things I need for his vitals. I have a bottle of Clorox wipes. I have a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I have paper towels. I have rubber gloves. And what I do is I take a pair of ski goggles. I have my mask on. And then I have an old chef's coat that I put over my jacket, over my shirt. This is just when I take his vitals. And that's how I do it. And then when he comes to his door, I have a TV tray in front of his door, and he sits on a chair inside his room with his mask on. I take all his vitals. I have an ear thermometer and a forehead thermometer, so I don't have to, like, get in his mouth. And the 2 times that I've gone into his room to collect the garbage or to clean his bathroom, what I did is I took a stadium raincoat, those disposable ones, put it over my clothes, had the mask on, the ski goggles, the rubber gloves, cleaned everything up, had the doors open to the garage so that when I brought the stuff out, I could just, like, get it into the garbage can. And then after I got it into the garbage can, I removed my gloves inside out, sprayed the top of the garbage can down, any doorknobs. I'm just kind of OCD like that.
Hey, wow. Ellie, we're going to take a quick break, and we want to continue this story. This is unbelievable, and listeners may have some questions. If you're open to taking a few questions, I know people would appreciate that. Ellie Zweigbaum, stay tuned.
Welcome back. It's 3:35. Jordana and Paul, thank you for spending some time with us this afternoon. We're hearing this incredible COVID-19 story from Ellie Zweigbaum. Ellie Zweigbaum is a local woman whose son Jacob, who's 19 years old, is suffering. And he is suffering. He's been suffering for about 3 weeks now. And she is his main caretaker with her two other young sons in the house and her husband. And if you missed any part of this interview, check out the rewind feature at radio.com. You can hear how Jacob came down with COVID-19, how she is keeping her home safe, and the getup she has to put on to even go in his room to keep herself safe so she can then be out with the rest of her family. She stuck through the break with us. Ellie, thank you. And then if you have any questions for Ellie, feel free. You can text or call us at 651-989-9226. Ellie, again, thanks for staying with us. And I wanted to ask if you had advice for anybody. I know we talked earlier and you said Jacob had a cautionary tale, cautionary warning, but do you have any advice or want to share maybe something with other caretakers?
Well, I was thinking, you know, there are a couple of things. One thing before I say the advice is that when I did speak to the specialist, and this was like a week ago, so we may have different data now, but he was telling me how 40% of the information they're getting back from China that we're not necessarily hearing on the news and that China is keeping from us is that 40% of the cases that they had were these gastrointestinal cases like Jacob has. And there could be a lot of people out there that don't even realize that that's what's going on, and they might be exposing themselves to others. They might be, like, still going outside. I've seen at the park, which is very upsetting, kids still playing baseball or basketball together. And it's really, really important that people understand that just because you might not have the symptoms, you might be a carrier, you might not realize that you have it, and you're passing it along to other people by being out. And one of the best things I've heard is the longer that you do not quarantine yourself, the longer we all are going to be quarantining ourselves. So it's not really fair for people to be exposing themselves. That's kind of what Jake wanted to let out. I mean, some of the other kids that he's gone to school with that also, you know, left from the Boston airport, came home. They had very similar symptoms. Some of them live in states where they've been able to be tested, and others have lived in states just like ours where they're suffering and going through all the same symptoms as Jake and can't get a test. And, you know, he really, really wants us to know that please stay home unless it's an emergency and you need to leave.
Ellie, in the midst of your misery, your family's misery, Jacob's misery, you're very eloquent, and we appreciate that. What would you say? There are some talking heads out there who make the case that this is just like the flu, it may be a bad case of the flu, and they go on and on. What would you say to people who question the shutdown, the physical distancing, who question everything? What would you say to them right now?
You know, I'd say a couple of things. One, this may like seem like it's just really annoying to be home, but we're not like this is not like we're getting bombs tossed on us, or we're like, you guys are in your own houses. You can watch TV, you can do nothing, but you're in the comfort of your home. So it really shouldn't be that bad to do that, to stay at home, number one. And what was the second part of the question you asked me?
No, just the people who say, well, this is the flu, and, you know, so many people are killed by the flu every year.
Our family actually, you know, even, you know, questioned it at first, like, well, how do you know this isn't just the flu? Well, first of all, he has no fever, and not that you have to have a fever with the flu, but I've never heard of anyone having the stomach flu with a headache, with a chest pain, with all these other conditions all at once, and go on for 18 this mother I've been speaking to, she's on her 21st or 22nd day of this. Only her husband was able to be tested because he's a doctor, but the rest of their family can't be tested. But it's obvious that that's what they have. And it's just this, the difference between the flu is like, once you start feeling better from the flu, you're better. Jacob, you know, a couple days ago when it was nice out, felt good for about 2 hours, went outside for about a half hour. It was the first time he had been outside in like 13 days. And then all of a sudden, back, same symptoms, had the diarrhea, had the headaches, and you get over the flu. This, is, for some reason, is just staying in their symptom, their system. And what I've heard from several doctors and several of these other parents that I've spoke to from his university who are going through this, that when you have the GI symptoms, it can last from like 3 weeks to even 6 weeks, which Jake's not going to be happy about when he hears that, but it is taking a really long time to get through people's systems.
Ellie, have you tried any medications? You know, we're hearing about this hydrochloroquine.
Yes. So
I guess the doctor prescribed any of that?
Too. So all of his doctors, we've talked to his allergist, his neurologist, his primary pediatrician, and this other pediatrician at the University of Minnesota. And all of them are not a fan of the, I can barely say it, the hydrochloroquine. And the
so they won't give it?
Mix. They don't want to give it to him because he doesn't have the respiratory symptoms. And so there's like different strains of this going around. And if you give it to somebody, just to give it to some, you don't know what the side effects are. They can have like really bad hallucinations and really bad vivid dreams. And they right now don't think that that drug, all of them, and they separately have not recommended that or are not fans of it. And it might work for some people, and that is great. But for Jacob, he's not a candidate for that.
Ellie, I'm curious. Jacob right now is not being counted in the numbers, the people that have contracted COVID-19. My understanding is you have to be in a hospital, you have to test positive to actually be counted.
That
Do you
is
think
true.
The number... That is true. Do you think the numbers are being underestimated? I hear some people
They're
saying, oh, it's being
overestimated. When I talk to his doctors, that's why they are saying, you know, try to keep him out of the hospital because you could be likely like Jacob could go into the hospital. He could actually have it, but then actually get exposed to more and get another strain or bring that strain home somehow on his body to the rest of us, which is crazy and scary. And today we actually are going, after this interview, we are going to go to the University of Minnesota, and he is going to be having to get some labs done to rule out, you know, to make sure that this isn't something else going on at the same time or if he's getting something else. However, we asked several times, can he get the test? And they said, no. They are super frustrated that we can't, but we do not have tests in Minnesota to give to people unless they're admitted.
Unbelievable. Ellie, we want to thank you so much. Yeah, that is unfortunate. It really is. I mean, your story is amazing and powerful, and we've tweeted out a link to the story that everybody can hear the whole thing. Ellie, I just give you so much credit. You have to take care of the whole family and Jacob and keeping yourself safe. And I've been praying for you, and we will continue to do so. I hope you'll keep us posted on Jacob and the whole family.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And my heart goes out to everyone that's having to go through this right now. It is not easy.
It is not easy.
Keep in our
Absolutely.
Prayers, Ellie. Hang in there.
Thank you.
Ellie Zweigbaum, that is just, I mean, people are suffering right here in our community. It could be in the house next door to you. This is real. These are kids. I mean, he's 19 years old, Paul. It's not a 90-year-old person.
Right. And you can't get tests. You cannot get tests. We sent men to the moon. We can't get tests. How is that possible? All right. Well, when we come back, should we take a break and do some uplifting stories. We found a few. I found a few. I know you've got a few. The lighter side of coronavirus, which sounds like quite a pivot from this last interview. But there are some good things going on out there. That's next. Okay, I'm going to try to jam in just a little bit of weather therapy here. The relapse is real. The rumors are true. Spring is always two steps forward, one step back, and we will take a baby step back Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. We will see some slush Easter Sunday. The Easter Bunny not amused, and it's going to be cold. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday may not get out of the 30s with a wind chill around 20. But keep this in mind, that sun angle way too high for it to stay cold for long. The sun is high in the sky as it was the first few days of September. So we will pull out of this. And the great news, NOAA's models predicting 50s and 60s returning the last week of April. So that's what's sustaining me through this cold spell. And I don't think most of us will be doing any shoveling or plowing. If you live in southeastern Minnesota, Sunday night could be rough. But I think in the metro, it's going to be more of a nuisance snowfall. As for this evening, just a snow shower, then clearing, 28. The sun out tomorrow, light winds, 50. And then Saturday, the better day of the weekend if you have some stuff you want to do in the yard. Mostly cloudy, dry most of the day, high 38. Easter Sunday, rain changing to snow. By the way, I'm sorry, Saturday's high, 53, which should feel good. Easter Sunday is when the temperature starts to drop. A stiff north wind, rain changing to snow, inch or two in the metro. Maybe 6 inches for parts of southeastern Minnesota into central Wisconsin. They will get the brunt of the slush. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 30s for highs with a hard freeze back up into the 50s by the end of next week. 38 out there right now from the Rudy Luther Toyota Weather Center. Paul Douglas on News Talk 830 WCCO.
And washing hands, reaching out, don't touch me, I won't touch you, sweet Caroline, good times never seem so good,
so good, so good, so good,
so good.
George, you okay? Are you all right? That was a tough segment. I feel so bad for
Ellie. I know she's suffering, and Jacob is suffering, and they think he's getting better like one day, and then he has a setback. You know, today he was texting me this morning, and he said, "Oh yeah, I'm feeling okay." We were making jokes about the diarrhea, poop jokes, you know, and he couldn't even like be on the phone for the segment because that's how bad it is. It's really ravages you. Even a young, strong, healthy 19-year-old boy, it ravages you.
Now, I know a doctor called in and said, look, you can get the test, but only if you're admitted to a hospital. Mm-hmm. And thank you to everybody who calls in and texts in. And that makes sense to me. And yet, I mean, really, a hospital? Probably the last place on earth I'd want to be right now. Isn't there another way? What happened to the whole drive-through testing? You know, the ability to pull up and, you know, find out within 5 minutes, yeah, I got this or no, I don't have this. It just seems like there should be something in between staying at home, suffering quietly, not knowing what you have, or having to be admitted at the hospital, which, you know, in theory could make things worse. So,
you know, they're on their way to a doctor, an ancillary doctor right now, because the doctor wants to check, their doctor wants to check him out. So I said, keep us posted. So she's going to check in with us and we'll keep you updated on how Jacob is doing. And he's sort of the CCO patient now. So we'll just keep you posted on his progress.
Do you have any good news, Jor? Anything that made you smile?
Oh, I have tons. Yes, there are a lot of positive things that are happening. There really are. Look, this is just an example. I pulled this up this morning. A Dallas company that normally cleans mattresses, and that's got to be a gross job. But regardless, it normally cleans mattresses, is now using its technology to clean N95 masks. The goal is to limit the risks for medical workers who have to reuse the masks. It's called Clean Sleep. They use ozone, a gaseous ozone, a type of ultraviolet light and heat to sanitize the N95 masks so they can be used up to 20 times. The process kills 99.99% of bacteria and viruses in mattresses and other textiles, like the masks. And healthcare workers are facing shortages. So now they can send their masks to this factory in Texas, and they're using their technology to get those masks back out. Isn't that great?
Wow. That's very cool. That's great. There's a surplus of cheap chicken wings. The Final Four and the Super Bowl.
Oh, sure.
That's where most of the chicken wings in America are consumed. And, yeah, we had the Super Bowl just by the skin of our teeth, but no NCAA Final Four means that there are a lot of wings, and wings are cheaper than they've been since 2011, roughly $1 a pound. Twitter co-founder and CEO Jack Dorsey setting aside $1 billion of his money, with a B, more than a quarter of his wealth, to help fund coronavirus relief
Amazing.
Efforts. And I was struck by Minnesota Daily had this story. University of Minnesota task force collecting gloves, masks, other PPE supplies from labs at the university in an effort to aid clinics, testing labs, and hospitals. Hundreds of university researchers have contributed their laboratory supplies of personal protection equipment. And they've stockpiled tens of thousands of gloves and hundreds of N95 masks, swabs, gowns, disinfecting wipes. Supplies are still being collected at the Faye Thompson Center for Environmental Management on campus. But kudos to the U for donating all of that equipment they needed desperately. Good for them.
People are doing amazing things. I feel like every company now that I follow on, you know, Insta or Twitter or Facebook, whatever it is, every company is now doing something. Burton Snowboards, you know, I love snowboarding. Burton Snowboards are donating, I believe it's like 50,000 masks, whatever they could get their hands on. Or it might, I have to double check. It might have been 500,000. But here's a story that might affect you that is positive. The much-awaited stimulus cash is going to be flooding into bank accounts maybe as early as next week. Millions of taxpayers are going to begin receiving the extra money. Now, this is money for rent, groceries, other bills, whatever you need, possibly as early as Friday. That's great news. It could cover the first wave of these checks could cover 50 to 60 million Americans, those of you who have already given your bank account information to the IRS. The first group includes Social Security beneficiaries who filed their tax returns already. And again, it will likely hit next week, and they could hit your bank account by April 13th. That is great news, and hopefully you are one of those people that are going to see that check.
That would be a very pleasant surprise.
That would be nice, yes.
Okay. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk to the founder of Love Your Melon, Zachary Quinn. He has an amazing story. And he's doing some really creative things and powerful things with masks regarding donations. I'm amazed, Jor, at the number of Minnesotans who are rising to the occasion and rising to the challenge of our time. An entrepreneur like so many others who's stepping up and doing amazing things. A chat with Zachary Quinn coming next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.